Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome, Cinematicanos, to Season 3, Episode 20 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and joining me here in the Cinematica studio are...
Hello, it's me.
And me.
Hello, Simon and Kaylee. You're allowed to introduce yourselves.
Everyone knows.
No, we're getting new listeners every week.
You know. You've got to be a hipster. You've got to know.
Hello, everyone. My name's Kaylee Carruthers.
Okay. Hello. Yeah.
And the rich... deep tones of Simon are on the other side of the room. In today's episode, Michael Haneke's modern classic, Amour, Cirque du Soleil are going to take us to some worlds away, and teenage witches replace teenage vampires in the affections of teenage audiences. We also take a look at the film diary website letterboxd.com, that's letterboxd.com, with co-founder Matthew Buchanan. We'll be talking to him a little bit later on, but first, let's have a look at what is in the mailbag. We've had some great mail
this
week.
What's in the box?
We do. Okay, so on Twitter.
yeah, you're allowed to read it aloud.
Yes. So I'm trying to send psychic messages out.
Use your inside voice.
Yes. Reese Pie said, I have a two-word review for you. Cloud Atlas, engagingly bonkers.
Oh, Cloud Atlas, that still doesn't have a release date here in New Zealand, does
no.
it?
No.
And so,
not for a want of asking.
please. You know, it's one of those ones that even if you don't like all of it, it's got to be worth watching.
I think so too. I'm really curious.
Maybe it'll just slip into the World Cinema Showcase, and maybe that it'll just get like Cabin in the Woods last year. It'll just get one or two screenings for the aficionados, and then disappear.
Or the not quite World Cinema Showcase. They haven't announced what it is yet, but it is a bit of a mystery this year.
It is a bit of a mystery because my understanding is that there are some technical concerns, certainly in Wellington, about whether the venue there will have DCP in time.
Ooh, wow.
That classic DCP conundrum.
And also about Cloud Atlas from Sonal, her two-word review is Philosophy 101.
Ooh.
And also from the same person, her two-word review for Side Effects, if it's out in New Zealand this week, which it isn't.
It's not.
No, but I am looking forward to seeing it.
That's the new Steven Soderbergh film, isn't it?
Yeah,
possibly the last Steven Soderbergh film.
They're talking 9 May, but even that I think might move.
Yeah. So Sonal's two-word
review. Nobody knows anything.
No.
Sorry.
Sonal's two-word review is Heavy Machinery.
That's and because all three of us haven't seen that film, that is just as mysterious a comment as it could possibly
be. Like
I've watched the trailer twice.
Heavy Machinery. Is it good?
Yeah.
It's dark. It looks pretty dark.
Okay.
Like, yeah, dark thriller, psychological thriller with...
A few hallucinations.
Yeah, I think more than a few.
Yeah, good.
Is this going to be the year of hallucinatory thrillers?
You know, hopefully.
Well,
it'd be great.
Who's seen the R-rated Trance trailer?
The Red Band trailer.
Red Band.
No, you showed it to me last week, and I haven't been able to sleep properly.
Yeah.
Since.
You see, I always think of Gumboots. Red Band. I don't know why. Oh, that's my phone.
You forgot to unplug your phone.
To unplug the phone. It's all right. They'll pick it up.
Yeah.
I'll turn it down in a minute. Hey, we got some other correspondence, didn't we?
We did, on Facebook, and I should have printed it out, but I didn't. So if we can move on and then come back to it.
Okay. It was a lovely letter, wasn't it?
Yeah, indeed. Looking forward to sharing that with everybody.
I'll go and unplug my doodack. Yeah, we'll be back in a sec.
Well, why don't you do that?
You guys carry on.
Let's do the top five and see what people have been... see what people have been... going to see, despite the fact that the New Zealand weather summer weather continues to be fantastic.
I'm going to multitask. All right, so in at number five this week, this is 40, which is down from number four, which was our film of the week last week.
I just get a feeling that the time of year and all the competition is going to mean that This Is 40 isn't going to find its audience until later. Well done.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you turn 40, you kind of want to move on, don't you?
You don't want to be reminded?
Yeah.
Number four, down from three, Safe Haven. Number three, down from two, Mount Zion. Opening at number two this week is Beautiful Creatures, and locking in the number one position for the second week in a row, A Good Day to Die Hard.
Die harder.
So holding its own.
And
I would say that round about now, Mount Zion will have cracked the $1 million mark in the New Zealand box office. And I just got a press release as well last week saying that they were rushing it out into Australia. So really wanting to take advantage of the heat that it's generating. So that's a fantastic New Zealand success story.
It is, isn't it? It's great.
Mount Zion. Yeah. And despite pretty crushingly bad reviews, A Good Day to Die Hard still
keeps boxing on, eh?
Mm. Yeah. And I tried to introduce Kaylee to the wonder that is the original Die Hard on Monday night.
Yeah.
What
happened?
She was not impressed.
Really?
Were you? No, she's shaking her head. I can't believe it. What about
Alan Rickman and the whole...
She just laughed all the way through.
Gouge out his heart with a spoon. Remember that line in there? Where he gets, was that in there? I'm sure it was. I know what that is now.
Okay.
It's Robin Hood.
Oh, that's another Alan Rickman.
I'm going to gouge out your heart with a spoon.
I have seen Robin Hood.
Yeah. But the whole idea that they even had spoons there, I'm not so sure.
No, but at least in the first Die Hard, Bruce Willis looks like he's meant to be there.
Yeah, he's ripped and ready.
He's got hair.
Yeah.
What I said was... I think by the time I was old enough to go to the cinema, Bruce Willis didn't have hair anymore, so it was a bit of a shock.
I remember watching him in Moonlighting.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right. And there are a few other things that we noticed for the original Die Hard again, 1988. First of all, lots of smoking. Smoking in airports.
Everywhere.
Big hair.
Yeah.
Big shoulders.
Shoulder pads, yes.
Yep. Yep, and there was that guy doing coke in the office. He was a bit naughty.
And jokes about Pearl Harbor and tape decks by the Japanese executive, because that was the thing at the time. Japanese were going to be taking over.
That's right. That's right. No, I can't believe you didn't like it.
No, I got serious worry.
Really?
Oh, yeah. God.
You're such a now generation. Eh? This is an action film that needs a bit of time.
It took time to develop your character.
And, it's like a fine wine. It just needs to. Brew away a little bit. It doesn't just go crash and bash straight away.
Okay, so when you show me The Notebook, which was the quid pro quo, we're going to watch The Notebook next week.
And you're
going to hate it. On principle now, because, I've given you my best. And you
I think Kaylee needs to watch The Last Boy Scout now.
Okay, so we've located.
We got this absolutely beautiful letter. It was a ray of sunlight. It was fantastic.
It was. Hannah Carter sent us this email, and I shall read it to you. Hi, Simon, Dan, and Kaylee. I recently stumbled across your podcast by link from the Cuba Lighthouse's website and wanted to say a quick hi. I am a 26-year-old lawyer from Wellington who has recently become obsessed with film, as are we all, Hannah. I religiously listened to Commode and Mayo's film review of BBC Five Live, which was partly the inspiration for doing this. I think it was one of the shows that we listened to, and we thought we can do a local version of that, and we do. Thank you for the podcast. It is insightful, entertaining, and interesting. Hannah has started a film review blog, which she doesn't actually link to, incidentally.
No, but if we find it,
tell us what the link is, we will let everybody know about it. And so she has given us a few two-word reviews, which I thought we'd share with everybody. Zero Dark Thirty, Tortuous Suspense, Les Miserables, Emotional Whirlwind. These are way better than the two-word reviews that I've been coming up with recently.
You're hired.
Exactly.
We might need a copyright in the background.
Life of Pi, Vivid Allegory, Django Unchained, Cinematic Kleptomania. These are perfect. Lincoln, Heavy Procedural, Argo, Hollywood Help, which is a nice touch there, and Silver Linings Playbook. She's been to see all of the Oscar all of the Oscar contenders, definitely. Silver Linings Playbook, easy bet. So thanks very much, Hannah, for your feedback, and tell all of your friends.
You are officially part of the family.
Yeah,
that's right.
Definitely.
With all those two-word reviews, you're hired.
All right. Now, it was Oscars on Monday. We're not going to talk about it because, frankly, it was a pretty tedious event, wasn't it? I managed to avoid all of it. There was no massive surprises in terms of the awards.
No.
Except that we're all really disappointed that this film that we're about to talk about next only won the single prize rather than taking home the big one.
¿Qué se pasa? ¿Qué es que ya? Han. Cucú. C'est moi. Han. Kisses first. Han. Kisses first.
Oh, touching scene when you remember it from the film. That's Jean-Louis Trintignant and a silent, unresponsive Emmanuel Reva in Michael Haneke's Moore. Mm. And Simon.
That's the beginning.
It is. That's the moment, isn't it? That's the moment where everything changes.
It's hinted at prior to that and during, you know, when he wakes up at night and she's just sitting in bed staring ahead she gets woken from that, or you know, he alerts her and she goes back to sleep, but she's just sitting there, like, and then that scene there, because there is a sense of foreboding, isn't there, that this is coming, and she's at the kitchen table and they're just having a meal, and then bam, she just isn't there. She's just staring blankly, and that's that scene there where he's talking to her, trying to get her attention, and you can hear the sense of panic that's getting creeping into his voice, and the way that that's acted is just stunning.
Yeah, it's the film itself is played on that kind of high note all the way through in terms of the people holding their emotions in check just about, or at least the two central characters. Isabelle Huppert as the daughter doesn't quite hold hers in check to quite say the same degree, but you can see that these are two people who are desperately trying to, you know, have been in control their whole lives.
Yes.
And trying to maintain that control at a time when life is conspiring against
them. And dignity. You know, and I thought that I haven't seen such a such a smart, sort of in touch film with that sort of process, and the fact that people, you know, ultimately want dignity, I could actually watch that again because it's so tender, and their relationship is so strong, and but it's their world and they don't really let people in. And that's how I actually imagine those things to work, to be honest, that it's hard work, and very private, and that comes through a lot in the film.
Yeah, there's something about those two characters that they've even sort of shut the door on their own family to a degree. You know, they're two aging former music teachers in Paris, and so they love fine music and they still go to concerts, and they're at the beginning of the film they're very active
and they dote on each other. And it's beautiful to watch that intro.
It is and I was trying to describe it to somebody the other day who hadn't seen it, and I was just like, well, can you imagine the first if the first 10 minutes of the film Up was like the whole film? You know, and as wrenching as that 10 minutes of Up was, you know, this is a film that really involves you in these people's lives and their relationship. And when she starts to deteriorate, and he's so desperate to keep their independence and to keep their dignity and to continue to care for her, at the expense of his own health to a degree, I think it is really wrenching. Michael Haneke has a reputation for violence and brutality and a sort of ice cold confrontation to his filmmaking. He made Happy Games Funny Games rather, and films like that, and The Piano Teacher, which are really confrontational films. And this is a film he's called it Amour. I know that before it played at Cannes last year, I think people thought that title was going to be kind of ironic, bearing in mind what he's done in the past, but actually it's the most perfect title, isn't it? Because it really is it really is a love story.
Completely, it is. And yeah, it's a very hard film to describe because I think it's so accurate in the way that it portrays, you know, a relationship and the work and suffering and I don't know, like tragedy in a way of this romance that's going down this path. And it's so neat to see a film where it's so subtle in the ways that, I mean, they're a little bit grouchy with each other, but they have been together for 40, it comes across so well that they've been together for so long, and they have all these little sort of habits and so on that come through. I love the way that that's portrayed. It's very real, very, very real. And yeah, It's a tough film, but it asks a lot of questions, and I think it's a strong statement towards kind of how people should have the right to sort of leave this world and leave it with dignity.
And it also, if you're my generation, then if you're lucky enough to have your parents still around, they're approaching that sort of stage of life, and you're forced to sort of consider what would you do. Mm. You know, you're about to the circle of life is about to become complete, and you're going to be asked to care for these people who once cared for you, and what sort of choices are they going to want to make, and you might be left to make choices for them.
Yeah,
It's
funny that the daughter in the film is incapable of those decisions, and is incapable of making doing the hard work, and she kind of flits around though. But then she has her own kind of commitments, and everyone. So
she doesn't even live in the same country as them, and that's enormously difficult because she has to fly in and then fly out.
Yeah, and the way that is portrayed, where there's this tension because she wants to basically take control of it, but then he knows that there's no way on earth that she's actually going to be able to reach in and do the work that's required and look after his wife. So it's sort of, yeah, I found all that really, the way that played out was really well done. Mm. Really well done.
Kaylee, you've seen him more?
Yes, it was a highlight of my film festival last year, for sure. I saw it just after my grandmother passed away, so it was a bit rocky, but it was incredible. It was just a fantastic film.
It has a way of reaching into everybody's lives, every viewer's lives, one way or another. You're either at that stage yourself, or you know somebody.
Exactly. You've either experienced it, or it's making you think about how you would cope in the future. Mm. It asks a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Healthy questions.
Yeah, and it's one of those films where it's like after it ends, the auditorium's kind of silent, and you just feel that sort of weight. Everyone's kind of like, oh God, that was really good, but oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's not a lot of talk, is there?
No.
Afterwards.
No.
It's immaculately, it's so immaculately made as well, isn't it? It's classic, almost old-fashioned filmmaking. The camera doesn't move very much. The compositions are just hell of a good. You know, it's just one of those films where he's got an aim in mind and has absolutely delivered on that aim, that goal. It's the finest film that I saw last year, I think, in terms of just pure sort of cinematic execution.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a film like it. I mean, I've seen equally as powerful, like I can think of like a Separation and then Prophet, they're films that are really, really powerful, but to me this is better than those, and it's so, I mean, it's in a way it's quite a simplistic story in that, or where it's set. I mean, it's not, you're in an apartment essentially, and the whole thing is filmed in there pretty much, and yet it's captivating, and it takes you into this world, and you're totally immersed. And these people are so believable, so that you really, it is a, quite an emotional kind of roller coaster that you go through because you're going through it with them. And I think it succeeds on every level.
It's not getting the widest of wide releases, is it? Slightly more than perhaps some art house movies, but this is a film that maybe people have to seek out. It's not necessarily going to every small town, is it, straight away?
No, I don't think so. I think it's in all the main centres. I don't know what the release pattern is outside of those. But it is, I mean, I think, given that it's played in the film festival and probably that it is, followers of film will really support it, so there's probably a number of people who probably caught it at festival in the festival environment, so they're probably keeping it tight post that. And that's, it's still not, an easy sell, like I think keeping it sort of restricted and seeing what comes of it, it's not a bad approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kaylee, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
I just have my two words ready.
You've got two words. I haven't done that yet. But the thing is, the Oscars, I mean, fantastic. It gets best foreign language and totally deserves it. Mm. But it's an interesting point, isn't it, that it was also in the best film category. And I would have to say that it it was, you know, for me, I would have picked it in both categories.
It was I think so too. It was a better all-round film than all of the other contenders, and perhaps the only real problem with it was that not enough of the Academy got to see it. Mm. You know, enough got to see it to be able to nominate it, but not enough to actually push it over the line. Or maybe it was just, you know, there was the other contenders were maybe, you know, it's a Hollywood, a film about Hollywood finally took it away, didn't it? And maybe that was a bit of loyalty there on the part of the Academy. So I'll let you ponder your two words to see if you can come up with those, but Kaylee's chomping at the bit with her.
Yes, my two-word review for Amour is essential viewing.
All right, my two for Amour, real life.
I'm just going to say it's brilliant. Go see it.
Yeah. Okay, that's nice work from Simon. That's unconditional praise for Amour, Michael Haneke's Amour. And time to disappear into a different world now.
All you have to do is step inside.
And frankly, that trailer's not actually all that helpful when it comes to clipping bits of audio. No. Because the voiceover of the trailer doesn't appear in the film, and the music that you're hearing doesn't really give you much of a flavour of what the visuals are. And this is a film that is all about the visuals. This is Cirque du Soleil's Worlds Away, and this is a 3D extravaganza. James Cameron's camera, Andrew Adamson's direction, and Kaylee, you were our circus correspondent for this particular film.
So yeah, Cirque du Soleil, unlike some of their other films...
Aren't they a Canadian institution?
They are, actually. Yes, they are, although they're mostly based in Las Vegas now, as you can tell from the credits.
It's very Canadian there.
I guess. I don't know.
Well, hang on. Celine Dion basically owns Las Vegas now.
That's true. So, yeah, well, it's Celine and Cirque, that's it. Mm. Like... We've already invaded the States. They just don't know. We're just in Las Vegas. So unlike some of the other Cirque du Soleil films or like made for TV productions they do, this is actually more of a showreel piece. So we have our lead character who goes into the circus, is unpopular because she gets the stink eye from some normal girl standing outside of the circus.
Yeah, so it's just an ordinary run-of-the-mill sort of circus in a small town, isn't it?
And
unpromising sort of environment to start off with.
Mm. Yeah, so she goes into the circus grounds and catches the eye of the aerialists and then goes on a journey to try and find him. Yeah. And win his affections. And she ends up touring through a whole bunch of different Cirque shows that they've sort of stitched together with this story of her traveling through different dimensions trying to find the aerialist who has been kidnapped by this strange gang of people.
You're giving this plot way more credit than
Are there any carnies?
There are at the very beginning. Yeah. It's a very carny sort of environment and bearded ladies and whatnot.
Oh, good.
And clowns and mimes. Mm. And then basically what happens is that the big top, the ring in the middle of the big top sort of turns into quicksand and she falls in and, you know, it's a bit like, oh, is it a dream? No, it's not. It's reality or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, it was, they call it Worlds Away, and the first sort of two or three set pieces are quite, you know, impressive to look at. But then it goes into an extract from their Beatles show, which is still playing at Las Vegas, and I hadn't expected that. I hadn't expected that moment would appear, and I said, oh, that's Beatles music.
Wasn't this a collage of a number of shows?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's, and there's an Elvis show as well. Hmm. As well as shows that are playing on Broadway and what have you. But it was when this Beatles moment that turned up, and I think, well, it's not really World Away, is it? Because this is a world where obviously now that the Beatles exist, so not a million miles away from one in which we ourselves actually exist. And so it sort of dropped me out of the magic there for a moment, and then that was the moment when I also realised that actually this was just a showreel. You know, this was just a chance for you to go, oh, that's the one I want to go and see when I go to America on my holidays.
It's a great promo piece.
But they're making people pay for it.
Yes. And there were some, I think, editing choices that were a bit confusing because there are... I mean, not that you need to be introduced to all the characters on stage, but there were some characters that were slipping in and out that you were never introduced to, that it was quite clear that they're important in that show, but maybe they had been replaced by the movie girl. So it was a bit disjointed, or actually it was quite disjointed in places, but it was still really beautiful and really interesting. And with the 3D, it was quite nice because it was quite immersive. Like, you would never get that close to actually seeing Cirque. But I did hear, or have heard from people who have seen Cirque, that the film did take away a bit of that kind of edge of your seat, like, oh my gosh, what if that person falls off and dies? Which I still felt that in the cinema. I was like, don't fall.
The performances are amazing. These are the very best in the world at what they do, and whether it's reinventing trapeze or reinventing the tissue work or pole dancing or whatever it is that I know that lots of people sort of do as a sort of hobby here, but to see it done at that level with the kind of extraordinary machinery and costume design that Cirque have been able to apply to their shows. You know, this is, I know that they've been to, they toured to Auckland once or twice and have played here. So it's not completely sort of alien territory for New Zealand audiences, but the chance to sort of see bits and pieces of it all in one go are pretty amazing. Yeah, but you do miss that liveness of it, of the fact that somebody is there doing it in front of you.
And also their touring shows aren't at the scale that they've documented in this film. My man friend saw them when they came to Wellington years ago at the St. James, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he said it was incredible, but it's like the scale
of their big shows. They're on a different level now. And the thing about doing those things in Vegas is that they're doing four shows a day or something, and they're like 45 minute shows, and so they, you know, it's like 45 minute show, it's an hour to turn around and reset, and they do it, and it's just a grind to actually do this sort of day in, day out. So perhaps the chance to sort of get one perfect version of it is to be seized. Si, it's playing all over the joint, isn't it? Like, yeah, it opened on Thursday.
Quite surprising.
Probably the widest release that I've ever come across.
For that type of content. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But it is dropping off quite a bit this week.
Yeah.
So if you do want to see it, make sure you get in quick, find your local cinema that is playing it, and book your seats.
And if you do have the sort of eyes that work with 3D, not everybody does, but if you do have 3D eyes, then do see it in 3D, because...
Is it a family... I mean, I'm assuming that this is a very family-type, orientated type.
I would say, yeah, absolutely. Kids would get it.
And it's only 90 minutes, so it's totally kid-safe. Yeah.
And actually, you can talk all the way through it as well, because there's no dialogue to get in the way of. So if kids,
don't encourage that, Dan.
there were kids at the screening I was at on Sunday, and they actually had to ask questions: who's that? What's going on? Why? You know, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, which is
story wise. So you sort of have to be able to sort of guide them through it.
Yeah, that's the case.
Take your kids to it and then send them up for a circus school. I wanted to do that after I finished watching it.
Circus Man at Avalon Park took the kids, and they had the, lots of acrobats. No animals at all, just acrobats, and it was spectacular. And then they had the old steel cage motorcycle ball of death. Which was five motorcycles got on there, and this thing was tiny. I was quite impressed.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about watching that sort of stuff in real life. You know, it really does. It transcends.
And the kids were mesmerized. Yeah. You know, fantastic. Circus.
Okay, so who's going to get to go first with the two words for Worlds Away?
You can go.
Okay,
can
well, my go. two words for Cirque du Soleil, Worlds Away, show reel.
Oh, I'm going to go with mesmerizing, show reel. Show reel is one word.
Okay. Oh, show reel, is it?
Show reel.
I'm going to make it one word in mine.
Okay. Si, you were so excited about this a few weeks ago, and now you haven't seen it.
And I'm not, I don't know, I just feel a bit deflated by it. I don't know if I want to rush out
by its very presence.
Just by the way you guys are talking about it.
It is beautiful.
The colour is extraordinary.
And I think is in an exercise of seeing a 3D, high-end sort of 3D production, it would be worth seeing, wouldn't it?
This is a film that I reckon would have really benefited from 48 frames, from that high frame rate, and it didn't get it. Because there's lots of motion, there's lots of, and because of 24 frames, the nature of that motion is that it gets blurry as people swing across the screen. It's so much the state of the art of 3D, it's Cameron's amazing 3D camera, etc., that I'm surprised that they didn't take advantage of that technology while it was there. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. Yeah, the thing is that if they Cirque du Soleil do another one, how interested will I be? Bearing in mind that
if it's one show.
Yeah, maybe if they because I don't know how much of a narrative sort of through line they have through their shows normally.
And
or
if they get Neil Gaiman behind
spectacular.
It,
yeah, a writer, get a writer. that would be a little top tip for the Cirque du Soleil people to turn their careers around. You know they need that sort of advice. All right, time for some news.
The most interesting Oscar night drama and the one likely to be the longest lasting was the protest by visual effects workers over the job losses in their industry. Company Rhythm and Hues has gone into bankruptcy despite helping director Ang Lee and VFX master Bill Westenhofer win Oscars for Life of Pi. 400 VFX workers protested outside the Oscar ceremony, and Westenhofer himself was forced to leave the stage by the theme from Jaws, which was so tacky.
So rude.
So rude. When he tried to acknowledge the plight of those workers in his acceptance speech.
Yeah, I think this is a story that's going to run and run. There's actually people protesting on Twitter now. They've changed their Twitter avatar, their profile picture, to a green, of a green screen, just to sort of show their solidarity with those, they, you know, the VFX artists, they're calling them, who are now finding that their work is being contracted out to, of all places, New Zealand.
Well, spell this out. So these are American. This is an American-based company we're talking about here. It's not something, because it was shot in Taiwan, wasn't it? Pi, a lot of it.
It was, and so, a lot of the work was done. A lot of the actual sort of VFX work would have been done in Taiwan and in Asia. It would have been contracted out, but this.
So this isn't work company. That was lost as it was, you know, on Pi that shifted to Taiwan.
No, the company did the work,
right.
but it wasn't able to charge enough. Presumably, it's somehow structured its affairs so badly it's not able to continue to pay its workers, and so many of the people that worked on Life of Pi have been made redundant and are now out looking for jobs, and those jobs are being outsourced to various companies around the world. We talked about this a few weeks ago. This is a major trend because there's a lot of people around who can do this sort of work now, and a lot of companies bidding for it, driving prices down. And of course, Hollywood studios being what they are, as we know from the release of the Hobbit emails to out into the public, we know that Hollywood studios will do whatever they can to get their costs down, maximize their profits, even at the expense of some talented individuals.
And also, director Ang Lee and the cinematographer also did not thank the VFX company when they accepted their awards.
No,
right. But and so, the Academy played Jaws to shut him up.
Yeah, that was the playoff music. I think, except for Anne Hathaway, she got something like Pretty and Nice, but everyone else got Jaws.
When their time was up, and it just played. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't notice that.
That was
when I was watching it.
Yeah, well, and the less said about that whole Oscar fiasco, the better.
I didn't really watch it, though. I just kind of had, you just refresh and see the results come through. And then I went for a bike ride.
Yeah, I went to the gym.
That's probably the better way to spend your time, both of you.
And I found out the results when I got home, which was nice. I was really pleased with the results on the whole.
Yeah, generally speaking, I don't think there's much to quibble about, apart from Amour, obviously, which we've talked about. But, it's hard to argue. Although I just wanted to point out that I actually only made one prediction about the Oscars this year, and I made it when I saw Argo at Telluride back in September. World premiere, by the way, I saw.
At Telluride, in case you missed it.
And you hit it out of the park.
And I did. I said this is going to win the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar. I wasn't sure about whether it would win anything else, but I knew it was going to get that, and sure enough. So I am one for one.
And what about that? There was a draw, wasn't there? There was a draw on one.
Yes.
Sound design or sound editing.
No BS, according to Mark. What was it, Mark Wahlberg? No BS. Yeah, like, nice.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But then he invited them both up separately.
Yeah, which
is weird. I don't think anyone coached him as to what would happen there.
No.
But go on, good for Sony, because they're both Sony films. So
Ang Lee should have sent an Indian up to get the Oscar.
Or a tiger.
Yeah. Not a guy in a tiger suit.
Well, he couldn't send the tiger up, could he? Because Rhythm and Hues are bankrupt. So.
True.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Darn.
Yeah, oh, that's a bit disappointing. Yeah, but anyway, there you go.
I think
Such is the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
We often get asked for advice here on Cinematica, like what film school should I go to?
We do all the time.
Oh, okay.
You do all the time. Well, yeah. People call us up. Send us faxes. Yeah. Well, now we have an answer. Hungarian art house legend Belatar has opened his own establishment in Sarajevo, teaching young people how to make this his kind of uncompromising and non-commercial films. Films like Santandango. Is that right?
Yeah.
That sounds great. I want to see that.
Yeah, which was like Tango on Speed.
Yeah, which was 7 hours long, and his most recent film, The Turin House, described
horse.
As...
The Turin
Horse. Oh, sorry, Horse.
Is that a band?
It should be.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is Turin. Now.
Yeah.
Described as a bleak black and white portrayal of a peasant and his daughter abandoned by man and God in their remote windswept cottage.
It's just like the archetype. It's like the archetypal art house film. And yeah. So there you go. If you want
lots
to make
lots of long pauses and glances.
Mm. Yeah.
And,
long
and cold landscapes.
Long takes with no camera movement.
Reminds me of going to Kaikoura for the holidays when I was a kid. Kaikoura is pretty. Now,
so there you go. Film school in Sarajevo. Away you go, everybody.
Excellent. And our final piece of news today came in at last minute. The Australia's queer community have slammed the Australian classification board over its banning of I Want Your Love, which depicts unsimulated sex between two male actors. Directed by American filmmaker Travis Matthews, the film was scheduled to screen at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival next month before being blocked by the classification board. Well, this is far from the first time a cinematic work has been refused film festival exemption in Australia. The board's decision comes as something of a surprise, considering they approved Donkey Love for screenings at both Melbourne and Sydney Underground Film Festivals.
I don't even want to know what Donkey Love is about.
Year, which contains bestiality.
Donkey Love.
But not homosexual bestiality, so...
All right. Well, obviously makes all the difference.
Yes.
So if that was two donkeys, that would be a problem.
Anyway, moving... Well,
there's female donkeys, Simon.
I know, I'm just saying, you know, if it was donkey on donkey...
The New Zealand...
That would be a problem. But if it's bestiality, it's
then
not.
Then it's a veterinary it's okay. training film. Kind
of, exactly. Remember, all creatures great and small, and he'd always lose his glove or something? Or his watch?
Okay, so...
That was great.
We digress.
Don't you remember all creatures great and small?
Just a little, I do, but it's television, so we don't talk about it on here.
Yeah,
so, okay. But I just want to point out that the New Zealand Lesbian and Gay Film Festival Outtakes, which is scheduled for around about Queen's Birthday weekend, as it always is in Wellington, they haven't announced their program yet, and it'll be interesting to see whether this particular title makes it through the Zealand censor.
Bring it.
I know that you know we haven't had a really good censorship stoush in New Zealand for a long while, and maybe it's time to find out what they're made of.
Bring it.
Okay, that was the news. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Matthew Buchanan, who is one of the co-founders of the film diary website letterboxd.com. That's letter, letterboxd.com. He was down in Wellington for the Webstock conference, and they have just turned their site from an invitation-only beta product to something that's available to anybody and everybody to go and start writing their own film reviews, rating the films that they've seen, and basically keeping a diary of the of everything that you've seen and sharing that information with your friends and your followers. So it's kind of social media site for film buffs. So I spoke to Matthew about where the idea for the site came from and how it's been progressing.
Letterboxd is a way for our members to share their opinion about film, more or less. We conceived it as a diary of sorts. So you go to the films, the thing that you want to do immediately after that is to share your opinion, give it a rating, maybe write a review, and that in a sort of a Twitter or Facebook sense is shared out to people you follow. And I guess when we see people using the likes of Last.fm and those sort of services to share taste in music, and there never really appeared to be anything that was really that really worked for the film lover to share what they were doing in a similar fashion.
There was, I remember, something to do, there was something that you could do on Facebook in the early days. There was a kind of plug-in or an app that was on Facebook that allowed you to rate stuff and share it, but it was a mission. It was like, it was hard work to wrangle, and lots of people on Facebook weren't actually, they might have been your friends on Facebook, but they weren't interested in what you were watching of the movies, whereas Letterboxd, you know, you go there knowing that you're a film lover and that you're going to be
sharing your experiences with other film lovers? Is there something? Is there a real benefit to the fact that you sort of that you're focusing that way?
I think that's what a lot of the members that have joined so far have found to be great about it. That is totally focused on film. We haven't been sort of sidetracked by TV or any other sort of pastime pursuits. That we are totally focused, and that the audience that's there is really passionate about films and about sharing their experiences, and the amount of writing, you know, we've had in the 15 months we've been in closed beta or private sort of invitation only beta, we've had 400,000 reviews written and over 20 million words.
And how many different films have people do you have on the site now that people can contribute to?
For in terms of the database of films, obviously the king of the hill is IMDb. They charge a lot of money on an annual basis for their data. So we instead of using that, we opted to use a open source database called the MovieDB, and they currently have about 160,000 films. It's quite a significant number, fewer than IMDb, but you'll find that any of the films that are sort of out in cinemas here and the world over really are fairly well represented.
15 months you've been in private invitation only beta, and you know that's a long I was one of the earliest sort of invitees to it. What's the purpose of having such a long gestation period before you go out to the public? What benefits do you get from that rather than just launching and
I guess we were a little bit timid. We weren't kind of sure what the response was going to be, and we wanted to safeguard ourselves against a mighty onslaught. That maybe that's a little bit egotistical.
Well, there were a lot of horror stories, aren't there, about websites that have gone out too early and been smashed by traffic.
Sure, and we used that time to improve the offering. We got literally thousands and thousands of feedback. Pieces of feedback posted on our on user voice, and we're able to use that to judge what were the most important things that people felt were missing from the site. When we launched, we were missing things like you could tell the site all sorts of all the films that you've seen in the past one click, but then there was no way when you were looking at someone else's material to hide all the stuff that you said you'd seen. And it was sort of the same thing with spoiler alerts. If you've seen a film, obviously you don't really mind about seeing spoiler alerts. So we sort of had spoiler. We would hide reviews that had spoilers in them from the start. But then, of course, it's annoying if you've seen the film. You don't want to have it in the way. So there's dozens and dozens of little tweaks and a few sort of larger pieces of functionality that we've added to the site. And then I guess we just felt that the time was right to say.
Yeah. Has the general tone or the general direction of the site changed in the 15 months? Has the direction that you've gone surprised you? Is Letterboxd now different to what you originally envisaged, or is it pretty much?
I think it's pretty much. I think we tried to stay focused on the two areas: the diary for sharing your reviews and ratings and what have you, and the other side of the site is the ability to make lists and lists around any topic, and to tag those and have people make similar lists, or when you make a list, anyone else can see what percentage of films they've seen on the list and those sort of things. So those two were the sort of the central tenets of the site, and that really hasn't changed. I think what we've done is we've done little bits and pieces of functionality around those two main areas, but we really have tried to keep the focus. We know that no matter how simple an idea is, it's very easy for it to become complicated. You only have to look at Twitter to see that the simplest of ideas was turned into this huge, complicated platform with many, many facets to it. And so we have, we know that some parts of Letterboxd, are initially not that easy to grasp, but once you get the hang of it, it seems to, and those are the things that we're now, in the process of making more accessible and just obvious.
The site was developed here in New Zealand, and yet you always had an international
international goals for the site. Like when it launched, there was no, you never said, oh, a little old New Zealand going out to the world. It just existed on an international level. And what is it about the web that you think that allows that? A stupid question, because the web just automatically allows that to happen. But tell me a little bit about your ambitions for the site then.
Sure. Well, I can sort of, you know, take you back a little bit. You know, I have, you know, like probably most of your listeners, been a film nerd forever. And I can remember back in the early 90s being a student and having, you know, this is before the World Wide Web, and the a guy by the name of Colin Needham put a database into one of the news groups that we could access through university accounts. And we could download that as a megabyte and a half of text files and search it with a text editor. And this is what eventually became the Internet Movie Database. And, you know, you want to know who was in a particular film, you had to do a text search on this massive text file. And that sort of, you know, that eventually, you know, became the Internet Movie Database. But even though that site has some of the features that we've tried to put into Letterboxd, it really isn't known for those, and it doesn't feel like a social network. You go to IMDb basically to get information, whereas we wanted to really sort of build a community that that would share their opinion. And so that, I guess that was, you know, the guiding light for us, is to be the more social, the more...
Yeah, there's a civilized nature level to the discourse on Letterboxd, which you don't always find online in terms of comments. Like we talk about IMDb, and one of the most sort of depressing places to go on the net if you're a film lover is the comments section of an IMDb page, or even of Rotten Tomatoes. There was this sort of scandal there a few months ago about reviewers being attacked by fans on a Rotten Tomatoes site, whereas the Letterboxd seems to, the social side of it seems to be much more positive.
We've tried to really engender a great sort of community feel, and you know, I think that we're still small in terms of user numbers, and we have seen as the audience has grown that there have been, you know, one or two instances where we've had to take action. But in general, everyone is exemplary in their behavior. And I think there's a, you know, the IMDb with its millions and millions of users, the percentage of people that are going to, you know, maybe, you know, not act in the way that is engendered by the community is going to grow. But I would hope that, you know, we can lead by example and keep everyone on topic. Basically, be cool.
Yeah,
is what we say on the site, and you know, be respectful of those people that you're you know, argue all you want about, you know, why this film beats this film or whatever, but just be respectful. And
do you have more influential users than others? Are some people sort of, you know, how the difference between Facebook and Twitter really is that in Twitter you can follow anybody, whether you know them or not, whether you've got a relationship with them or not. You just think that they're saying things that are interesting and contribute to your life. Do you find that there are people now on Letterboxd that are seen by the community as being sort of having more to contribute, or maybe either because of the number of films that they've seen or there's some kind of authority?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes from the writing, really, that those members that are able to write, and there are some that are, you know, that are highly productive and put, you know, hundreds of reviews per month sometimes, or at least tens of reviews every month. And if the writing is right and someone likes the style of the criticism about film, then, you know, those members will definitely attract more followers. And I think that's great. You know, if you share the opinion of someone that and you can get more of that opinion about films, and, you know, a lot of members have asked for a sort of a discovery mechanism, but we feel that the site itself is a discovery mechanism. Perhaps at some stage in the future we will turn our hand to using some of the data that we're collating in terms of generating recommendations, but just the sheer number of films that some of our top reviewers are watching, particularly in terms of obscure films, is fantastic for being able to find a few hidden gems.
It's a beautiful site to browse. Like the thought and the care that's gone into the design, the look of the thing is really impressive. And like, how big a team do you have working on that? On you know, not just the engineering, but the joie de vivre of the thing.
Sure. So my day job is as the co-founder of a studio in Auckland, and we build websites and apps, and we've been able to take a few of our staff and do this as sort of a part-time project within the studio. So there is myself and Mike Harding, who have done the visual side of the site and the user experience. And then my co-founder at Cactus Lab, Carl Von Rando, and Grant Berridge have done the lion's share of the development work on the site. And so I guess we've had one or two other of our staff assist along the way, but really it's sort of those four that have brought it to fruition.
Wow. There's 15 months of invitation only. Last week, you opened the doors up to the world. Where to next for Letterboxd? Like, that's 15 months of investment that presumably you're going to want. You know, this isn't a hobby, right? You're going to want to get something back for it.
Yeah, I think we started off thinking, well, we want to do something. You know, we're here at Webstock, and one of the guiding principles of Webstock is always, you know, do the stuff that you love. And if you're not doing the stuff that you love every day, not that we don't love our clients, we do, but also, you know, sometimes you need a creative outlet where you're in complete control. And this was an idea that I had, and that we decided we wanted to pursue. And we decided that if we built it, they would come. Presumably they have come, and we were at 40,000 members on the day that we launched publicly, and that number is starting to grow more rapidly, which is fantastic. We've also introduced the ability to pay a small fee per annum for a few additional perks, and that will be something that we'll watch fairly closely. So I think, you know, we really just want to start to ramp up the size of the community and see where that takes us. But for now, we're sort of investing and subsidizing in the development of it because we love it.
Cool. My next question, probably my final question actually, is kind of a self-serving one actually, and that is, at the moment the site is very text-based. I know that a lot of young people like to video blog or audio blog or what have you. And, of course, we have a podcast that has various segments about films. And I was thinking that, you know, it would be great to have a little cinematica page on Letterboxd where we could maybe snip our individual film segments and attach them to your to the film page. You know, is that something that you're looking to for the future, sort of more audio-visual contributions?
Yeah, the first suggestion of that, I guess, was some members asking if they could post videos in the comments, and I think this is an extension of that, is to say, hey, let's sort of address the multimedia aspect of the web and say, well, you can criticize film in a number of different ways, and it doesn't just have to be in writing. I think, you know, there's some parts about that we'd need to more fully sort of investigate, but I'm sure that you know, at some point that will be something that we look at.
Brilliant. Matthew, we love Letterboxd and we want to see it go from strength to strength. Thanks for talking to us on Cinematica.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dan.
I like you.
You don't know anything about me.
My family's different.
You a witch?
We prefer the term caster.
When I turned 16,
my powers will be claimed for either the light or the dark.
You think you can keep Lena so good, so innocent? Wasn't I the same before I was claimed? And look at what I am now.
I don't know what I'll be. I have 75 days left, Ethan.
All right, Beautiful Creatures is a film, another one that's sort of opened around about Valentine's Day, because it's a romantic version of a sort of teen horror
21st film. Of Feb it opened.
Yeah, but I think it opened Valentine's Day around the rest of the world. I'm not sure why it was kept back here, but this is effectively replacing Twilight. You know, the Twilight franchise is finished, and here's another...
Or maybe it's just a bridge in between when The Host comes out, which is Stephanie Meyer's next, her book.
Right, right. And is The Host going to be appealing to the same sort of that young adult marketplace?
Have you read it?
No. Why would I want to read that?
I don't know. I'm just saying, you seem very authoritative, so I thought you might read it.
There was a big cutout for it at the cinema. And I was like, oh, they've made The Host. That was quick.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, we've got another Hunger Games this year.
At least that's going to be good.
Yeah. So there's plenty for the kids to watch.
This looks a bit kind of like it's got a bit more bite to it. No joke intended.
It's not about vampires this time. So, but it is about witches, or casters, they call them. That's apparently the technical term for people who cast spells. This surprised me, I have to say, because it's really smart. And very funny and quite subversive, and some of the humor and the dialogue between the characters is it's very cynical about conservative American small town life. It doesn't buy into the value system of that you would expect, and it's really sharp.
So it's
in
closer,
lots of ways.
In some ways, it's closer to The Hunger Games than Twilight.
Yeah, it's Passing Judgment, definitely. And
it sounds like it's closer to True Blood than...
I'm unfamiliar with True Blood, but I'll take your word for it.
Except it's got a kiwi in it.
This has also got a kiwi in it. Alice Englert is the star... the teen female star of Beautiful Creatures, and she is the daughter of Jane Campion. And is... born in New Zealand, so this is, you know, there's a little bit of sort of tied back to Kiwi land, and she's pretty good actually. And the two leads, both of whom are really unfamiliar, are supported by Emma Thompson and Jeremy Irons. So there's some good quality, solid English backing them up.
Yep.
Yeah, but the real quality is the script by Richard LeGravenaise. I don't know how much he's brought to the script, or how much of that sharpness and that cynicism is found in the original book, because it is adapted from a book. Who knows? But this one really surprised me, and also. I'm going to be just looking at how the film finished. I am not quite sure how they're going to produce a franchise out of this, because it seemed to wrap itself up really nicely at the end rather than leave a whole lot of loose ends hanging, which is really nice. You know, it's nice to watch one of those sort of big, essentially a franchise film, you know, not... It left you feeling quite satisfied in terms of the story. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, good on it for that.
Now, I know it's based on a book. Is it a book series or just a single book?
You know, I really should have done a little bit more research, but, you know, I couldn't be bothered. So I don't know. But it does, you know, but the only reason I think that it might be a franchise and be spawning multiple versions is simply because it's of what it's replacing and what it's competing against, you know, with The Hunger Games. But who knows? It may just stand alone. But if you were dragged along to the Twilight films, as I was year in, year out, you'll be pleasantly surprised by if you're dragged along to this one. And I would say that kids who have enjoyed those sorts of films will actually find there's a little bit of depth here. There's some good character work, but you know, the script itself is actually pretty witty. The banter between the characters is quite sharp. So, and the characters are stronger. You know that Kristen Stewart in the Twilight film, she was just such a drip, and there's nothing like that here. And the plot's, you know, good, and as I say, it ends in quite a satisfying way. So, Beautiful Creatures, Yeah, surprise package, really. Oh, that's two there words, isn't it? Surprise package.
Good work.
Thank you very much. That is our show for this week. Next week, Seth Rogen takes a road trip with Barbara Streisand, of all people, in The Guilt Trip. TV's The Sweeney gets a remake with Ray Winstone.
And Kenny Everett and the Big Nose? He was just the Big Nose. Like, you remember, yeah, it was Mick Jagger and he was Big Hands?
What brought that on?
Well, I was just thinking of Barbara Streisand.
She's more than a nose. She's She's got a very nice singing voice.
Where's that comedy gone? Kenny Everett.
Talking of comedy, next week we'll also be looking at the British romantic comedy I Give It a Year.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that looking at the lineup for next week, it's pretty obvious that the Oscars is finished, and there's nobody, there's see, nothing just, lined up there that's cool quality.
See, I'm just worried because I give it a year, like maybe it will surprise me, but I'm like, Rafe Spall, why? Why do you have to keep letting me down?
He's on the rise, though.
He's breaking my heart.
Life of Pi.
He's breaking my heart.
Well, let's not make judgments too soon. I give it a year. We'll see. We'll give it a week. See how we go.
Come back to it.
All that and more in next week's, exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget that you can click subscribe in iTunes. We're also, I'm doing a little bit of work this week on making sure that we can be found in all of the non-iTunes podcast directories. And if any of you have Android devices and are not maybe part of that Apple sort of thing, let me know whether you can find us and whether it's possible to sort of easily get us onto your Android device, because we want to make sure it's as easy as possible for you to find us. You can give us feedback like people have been doing for weeks.
Keep it coming.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Like Hannah, send it to us via...
You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle @CinematicaCast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast. And, of course, on our website at www.cinematica.co.nz, where you can also listen to our podcast.
You can listen on the Facebook page as well, because, we're just so convenient. The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, which you can buy at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music. There wasn't actually very much to choose from. So from the Cirque du Soleil film Worlds Away, this is by an up-and-coming young band you may have heard of, The Beatles, and this is Blackbird.
I thought you would have chosen some NZSO from Cirque.
Was there?
There was.
Was there?
You didn't sit through the credits?
No.
Oh. Yeah, there's a bunch of additional music was done by the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, so a lot of little Kiwi tidbits in there.
Oh, was like Kiwi music or just music played by them?
Just music played by them.
Oh, okay. Well, this is what happens when people don't send you press kits, I'm not going to sit through every minute of every credit sequence.
What do you mean? If you go to the festival, that's all anyone does.
What, sit right through to the credits?
Right through.
That's because at the festival they don't turn the house lights on, so if you get up too soon, you'll fall down the stairs. I just think it's that... the worry, if you sit and watch all the credits right through to the end, you get things like movie 43 happen and you get an extra horrid sketch. So I'm out of there. I do not want any surprises. So
Fair enough.
Okay, so this is The Beatles and Blackbird. Until next week, that's all from me, Dan Slevin.
Oh, and good night, everyone. Have a lovely, lovely evening.
Yes, and good night from me.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.